సద్గమయ తమసో మా జ్యోతిర్గమయ మృత్యోర్మా అమృతంగమయ ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. లార్డ్ లీడ్ అస్ ఫ్రమ్ ది అన్రియల్ టు ది రియల్, లీడ్ అస్ ఫ్రమ్ ఇగ్నోరెన్స్ టు ఇల్యూమినేషన్, లీడ్ అస్ from death to immortality. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsa Chano Ramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagad గురు. టుడే ఐ వుడ్ లైక్ టు స్పీక్ ఆన్ ఎ వెరీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ సబ్జెక్ట్ ఇన్ ది భగవద్గీత. దిస్ ఈజ్ కాల్డ్ సెల్ఫ్ సరెండర్, శరణాగతి. దేర్ ఆర్ లాట్స్ ఆఫ్ మిస్అండర్స్టాండింగ్స్ అబౌట్ దిస్ పర్టిక్యులర్ కాన్సెప్ట్. What does it mean? What are the implications? Is it a phenomena that we can choose and do? Or is it something for which we have to pay in the form of struggle? And what happens when we surrender ourselves to God? How is it connected with our day-to-day life? I will start with a beautiful story. The basis of this talk is there in the Bhagavad Gita, one very important verse. Ananyas chintayanto mam e janah paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. Two words are used here, yoga and kshema. The general meaning of this shloka is, those who think of me alone all the time, I take care of their welfare completely. But the Lord uses here two words, and if we understand the meaning of these two words, a lot of help will come to us in our day-to-day life. Yoga means to acquire what we do not have. You do not have a car, so you acquire. This word yoga should not be misunderstood in the popular sense of the term. You bend your back in 360 degrees angle or stand on your head. Yoga means to acquire something, to get something, to buy something, or to enter into a new position. This is all, you acquire something new. That is the easiest part. The most difficult part is kshema. Kshema means maintenance. You have a car. It's very easy to buy a car. Then what you have to do? Every day, early morning, whether you have time for God or not, go on scrubbing the car. Then you have to employ a dog to protect your car. Then you have to learn how to drive the car. Then you have to pay MOT, I don't know what they call it here, maintain yearly, whether it is fit to be driven or not. Then insurance have to be paid. And regular, you know, payment is to be given in the form of petrol. If you fulfill all these conditions, it is supposed to give you some kind of happiness. It is a utility. So, you enter into a new job. It's very easy to get a job, especially in India. If your uncle is a minister or MLA, something like that, very easily you can get a job. But to maintain that job, to be fit, Peter's principle will apply here. But then, how does it apply in the life of a devotee? The Lord Himself says, I take charge of the devotee's life. I get him what he needs. And here also we need to understand what we want and what we need sometimes may be diametrically opposed. We, many of us, do not know what we need. Our minds are so scattered and our mouths are so loose that we do not even stop to think what we need and what we want. And supposing, as an argument you say, suppose, Swami, we get more than what we need, we want this. Is there anything wrong with that? Yes, there is something wrong with that. See, let me give a small example. Suppose you have a 2-bedroom house and you say that's not enough, I will have 4-bedroom house. It's quite easy to add another 2 rooms to it. And afterwards, who do you think is going to hoover those 2 rooms? You think God is going to come and hoover all those things? No, you will have to do it. Often, we do not want to fulfill the responsibilities. We only want to take advantages of a position, of a big house, better car, whatever. There is a lot of responsibilities involved. A lot of worrying comes there. And it is no action goes in vain. If we acquire something and say, I can evade this, the consequences will be terrible. But when a person totally is dedicated to God, then do you know what happens? God will never allow him to get what he doesn't need. It is an unnecessary burden. Whatever he needs, at the right time, at the right place, it will come. And when it is not needed, that will be taken away also from the person. That is the necessary thing in self-surrender. But let me start with a beautiful story. Whether the story is true or not, that is immaterial. But it illustrates a point. So this was the verse. Those who think of me alone, without diverting their attention to anything else, I take responsibility, I bring to them what is needed, and I look after them in every way. So here in Sanskrit, there is a beautiful word. That is, dadhamyaham. Dadhami means, I give. Or vahamyaham means, I carry. Here in the Gita, the Lord uses the word vahamyaham, I carry. There was a Brahmin and he was a very orthodox man and he totally believed in the promise of this Lord in this particular way. His way of life was according to the ancient indicated system. He never accumulated riches. He would spend his time copying the Bhagavad Gita and distributing it. And he would go out for begging. Whatever he obtains by begging, he was quite satisfied with that. This is a true Brahmana's life. Brahmana here, not in the sense of caste, but in the sense of a devoted spiritual life. He was a very nice person and he was also a devotee of Krishna. So he was copying the Bhagavad Gita. He came to this particular verse and he copied that verse. And then he started thinking, after all, the Divine Lord is all powerful. Why should he carry it himself? He can only give. He doesn't need, he's not a servant to carry these things. So he thought, there must be something wrong here. The author of this scripture had done something misunderstood. So he cut that vahamyaham, stricken it, and wrote dadamyaham, I give, but I don't carry. And then after doing that, it was time for him to go and beg. He went and he started begging. But to his great misfortune that day, everybody was excusing himself. I'm sorry, we don't have anything. Please go to the next house like that. You know, in India, many people beg. Especially sadhus, beggars, and there are sadhu beggars. Or beggar sadhus, whichever way you wish. So there was a village, and one hefty sadhu was there, and with imposing personality, and after all, free food and no work. So he came to one householder's house and shouted, "Bring food, otherwise I will do what I did to the other man in the next house." Now the householder in that house was a lean and thin man, very weak man. He heard this lion's roar, and he got frightened. The sadhu, what he will do, God alone knows. So he brought lot of food, gave it to him. And then he asked, "What happened in that other house? What happened? I went and shouted, 'Bring food, otherwise I will take action.'" So the man said, "Get out." And I took action. I got out. So this man, poor man, good man, he couldn't do that. So he went on begging. It was several hours because he wasn't getting any food. It was burning hot. And this man's wife was a very pious woman. So suddenly there was a knock at this man's house, and two most lovely, sweetest, cutest boys came. And she opened the door of the cottage, and to her great astonishment, she saw this one of the boys were carrying a heavy sack. So she said, "What is the matter?" She never expected this. One of the boys said, that your husband had got lot of food today and he couldn't carry everything himself, so he asked us to carry it. So on his behalf, we are carrying the food material. And then, of course, the lady was very happy. She invited them inside and unloaded the materials. And then to her horror, she found that there was a big whiplash on one of the boys. He was a bit darkish boy. The other boy was very fair complexion, a little elder. And then this motherliness came forward, and she was pained and said, "My child, who had given you this whiplash?" The younger boy said, "It was your husband." But the woman said, "My husband is such a good person. He would never hurt even a fly. And he did this." He said, "Yes, you see what he did to me." Then she said, "My child, you come, I will prepare nice food for you, and you will eat food, you look very tired." They said, "No, once we have seen your husband, that is enough. Second time when he sees us, I don't know what will happen." So I just thank you and ran away. After long time, the husband returned completely tired, and very disappointed. But by the time he came, the whole house was full of nice aroma arising from the cooking pot. Various marvelous dishes were being prepared because his wife got so many best things. So he came and said, he didn't notice it. He said, "Today my misfortune, our misfortune, I couldn't get any bhiksha, alms." His wife said, "What nonsense are you talking? That you sent such a big sack full of things, and another matter, how come that you have hurt that cutest boy, sweetest boy? How cruel hearted you are." And it was news for him. He said, "What are you talking about?" Then she described what happened. And then he realized that it was Krishna who carried it. It was Balarama who accompanied him, that because the sacred words, they are truthful words. It is Bhagavan speaking means truth itself is telling. It is the truth which is being said there, expressed there in language. Then he understood how great wrong he had done by slashing that. And then he went, apologized to God, and then he again wrote back that Vahamyaham. Now here is an interesting point. After all, you may think, after all, it's a book. After all, he took, you know, pen and then slashed it like that, just to remove it. Why this boy had to be carry the burden or the consequence of this, what happened here? You remember, recollect the incident in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. One day, those who know the life of Sri Ramakrishna, you will understand what I am talking. There, at Dakshineswar, there are three temples. The Bhavatarini Divine Mother, Govinda, Lord Vishnu's Krishna, and 12 Shiva temples. So, Sri Ramakrishna was sitting in the temple belonging to Lord Krishna. It's called Vishnu Mandir in Bengali. Vishnu's temple. He was sitting in a corner and a scholar was reading Bhagavatam. Suddenly, Sri Ramakrishna saw a ray of light came from the lotus feet of Krishna, touched Bhagavatam, touched Sri Ramakrishna's heart, and went back to the feet of the Lord, forming a triangle. Since that time, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, Bhagavata, Bhakta, Bhagavan. All these three are one. The scripture, God, and devotee. They are one, one in three, three in one. So, we do not have God, excepting picture. But we may have two things. We may have a devotee. Sometimes we may not even have a devotee. But we have the scripture. Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Gospel of Ramakrishna. So, you have all the three. Because what is this book? We do not consider this book as a book. It is truth in the form of the book. It is God Himself. It is this understanding which makes some of the Hindu religious sects and even the Jews, they worship their, you know, what they call their Bible, the first five parts of this old, what they call it? Torah. That is what they worship. Sikhs, you know, the Sikhism, the book itself called Guru Granth Sahib. It is not the book, they are not worshippers of book, they are worshippers of God. They render all the service. This was proved by Sri Ramakrishna. And it is also proved in another way through history. Naam, Naamni, Abhed. Name and the named are one and the same. So, Hindus have this belief, if anybody thinks of God, only God, completely surrendering himself to Him, then God will do all that is necessary. This is called Sharanagati, or the act of self-surrender. Now this has been developed into a most marvelous system of spiritual discipline by one of the greatest teachers of Hinduism, Ramanujacharya. He called it Prapatti Marga, the path of self-surrender. Apart from the path of devotion, the path of devotion requires several elements. One has to be pure, one has to think of God all the time, one should never do anything, you know, which is against the scriptures. And one should be learned in a way of speaking, one should be very intelligent, one should have full of willpower. But the trouble with most of our devotees is, they have plenty of devotion, but very little willpower. You know, Oscar Wilde, he used to quip, I can stand anything excepting temptation. What else is there to stand? So, Ramanujacharya has developed, he called it Prapatti Marga. And he said, anybody who takes to this path, young or old, learned or not learned, is rich or poor, even these greatest sinners, If only they say, O Lord, we have done something wrong, which we should not have done, but it is done. From now onwards, I surrender myself to you, and I will try to lead a good life to the best of my ability. If anybody says this, then that person will be accepted by the Lord. And the basis of this is also goes in the Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana. There is a beautiful incident. Vibhishana wants to come and surrender himself to Sri Rama just before the Rama Ravana battle begins. Now, the followers of Rama suspected, how come suddenly this enemy from the enemy camp, this person is trying to come? Is he a spy? Has he got any ulterior motive? And then they advised Rama, don't trust him. Then Rama makes a beautiful statement. He says, if anybody once in his life tells, O Rama, I surrender myself to you, from that time onwards, it is my vow that I will accept his responsibility and I will look after him. Whether he has ulterior motive or not, whether he sticks to his vow or not, but I will take responsibility to himself. You know, this incidental I remember. Sister Nivedita, she was accepted as a disciple by Swami Vivekananda. And at some point, she had some problem with the Guru. Many of my disciples have problem with me, in case it is of any consolation to you. But I also have problems with them. It is mutual. So, Sister Nivedita expressed the doubt that would you still look up after me and then try to help me? And Swami Vivekananda wrote back, the tusks of an elephant, once they come out, they will never go inside. Once I give the word or I accept anybody, thereafter what the person does doesn't matter. I will fulfill my part. This was what Holy Mother did. This was what Sri Ramakrishna did. This was what every saint will do. This is what really God does. So this is the point Ramanujacharya emphasizes, that this is a path easily accessible to all. In fact, that is what Sri Krishna, after giving all the teaching, at the very end, what is it that he says? What is the essence of it? He says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja, giving up all other dependencies. I translate dharma as dependencies. You depend only upon me. Mamekam sharanam vraja. Take refuge in me. Aham tva sarva papebhyo moksha ishyami ma shuchaha. Do not grieve. I will take care of you. Though it is true, Swami Vivekananda had written, you know, small, very meaningful stories called Food for the Brain, if you look in the complete works. There was one man, and he read this verse from the Gita, and he thought he understood it. So every now and then he blurts out, I have taken refuge in the Lord, I have taken refuge in the Lord, I have nothing to fear. But his stupidity, his selfishness, his idiosyncrasies have not changed in the least. So just now and then blurt out, I have taken refuge in the Divine Lord. And he was very confident the Divine Lord will take care of him under all circumstances. So what is it that, what does it mean to take refuge in God? So let me tell you a funny story, what it really means. In Italy there was a village and there was a priest, and he used to say, I believe in the Divine Lord, I believe in the Divine Lord. Once upon a time there was a flood. Suddenly a flash flood was there. His house happened to be near the river and water was rising. And then, you know, the people, the military wanted to evacuate. They sent a truck. He was the last person remaining. He said, "I believe in God. He will save me. I don't want the truck." So truck went away. Water started rising. He went to the first floor. And then the military sent a boat. He said, "I believe in the divine Lord. I don't want boat." He sent away. The water was still rising. He went to the roof. And then the military sent a helicopter. He said, "I don't want a helicopter. I believe in God. He will save me." Water was rising. Slowly the water came up to here. He said, "Oh Lord, what is this? I believed in you and are you not going to save me?" A voice came, "You idiot, I sent a truck, I sent a helicopter, what else do you want?" So what does it mean that we take refuge in God? Does it mean we fold our hands and sit? It is one of the intensest activity, a life of intensest activity, to take refuge in the Lord, to believe in Him, irrespective of whatever happens. It is the most difficult thing. Faith is tested to the utmost. So, it is a wonderful path, but the path needs to be achieved through sadhana. Will not Lord accept if I say wholeheartedly, "Lord, I take refuge in you"? Will He not accept? He will accept. But like a loving parent, the parent wants the child to enjoy. This is a beautiful example I always give. You know, supposing you adopt a child, a poor child. From that time onwards, you look upon that child as your own child, right? And you want that child to be happy. And you prepare very nice food, maybe rice pudding or ice cream or whatever. And then you want the child to enjoy it. Suppose the child is sick. See, is it the child is telling, "I want ice cream"? Will you give the ice cream to the child? So what do? If necessary, you will give bitterest medicine to the child. If it doesn't take, you will catch hold of the throat of the child and force it down his throat. And the child may think that this my mom doesn't love me. But that's not true, because the mom loves the child. She is doing all this. If she doesn't do these things, then we have to say, the mom doesn't love the baby. Let him do whatever he likes. Love means whatever is good for the beloved, that should be done. So we are under the impression that when once we do this, then nothing needs to be done. The good Lord becomes our mother. One prayer and the Lord's, it is Lord's words. Rama has given promise. Suppose you are a Krishna devotee. You say, "O Lord, I take refuge in you." And then after some time, he doesn't serve you. Then you accuse him. "Krishna, you said to as Rama that once anybody takes refuge in you are going to look after him. Why are you not looking after me?" He said, "Foolish fellow, that was Rama who said. I didn't say that." If Rama said, then Krishna said, Jesus said, Buddha said, Ramakrishna said, every great soul says the same thing. Because who promised, who was Rama? Rama was God. So in every form it was Rama who did that. Okay. So then we have to make our promise that I take refuge in Him. These are the promises on both parts. The God's promise is, once a person take refuge in me, I will look after that person in every way. Our promise is, I have said, I will take refuge in you. From this time onwards, I have to fulfill my promise that what I made. I will only look up to God for everything in my life. How to do it? Ramanuja had summarized this sadhana or spiritual discipline for self-surrender in a most striking, beautiful verse. Anukulasya sankalpaha pratikulasya varjanam rakshishyati iti vishvasaha goptritva varnam atma nikshepaha karpanye iti sharanagatihi. We have to fulfill certain conditions. What are those conditions? Anukulasya sankalpa. I take a firm vow to myself. Whatever pleases the Lord, that alone I will do. What a wonderful thing. You see, you want, supposing you join a school and there is a wonderful teacher and you want to become a good student. So, how are you going to please your teacher, because he is going to teach you? What does your teacher expect from you? Get up in time and then pray to God and do your homework and then be prepared. When you go to the school, be prepared to listen attentively to what the teacher says. And a teacher, a true teacher, will be happiest when he sees his students really making an effort to understand, is it not? Similarly, if you are a doctor and you are treating a patient, and the patient who accepts your prescription and the instructions how to behave, if that person fulfills and becoming better, how joyous it will be. The work becomes joyous only when the fruit comes. If you are a gardener, your flowers and fruits must come. If you are a teacher, what are the fruits? Your students must acquire knowledge. If you are a doctor, what are the fruits? Yes. You know, there was a very fat woman. And she went to a doctor. And doctor understood what is the problem. Said, you want to reduce your weight, isn't it? Here is a dietary prescription he gave. Come back after 1 month following this one, you will get good results. And she came back after 1 month. She was now doubly fat. And she complained, doctor, it didn't help me. Doctor was astonished. It should have helped. So what were you doing? Said, what difficulty you put me through? You prescribed this. You see, even normal food I am not able to take. After taking normal food, to take even this dietary food also. No wonder that she became doubly fat. So in any field of life, if we really pay attention and can't focus upon what we have to do, fulfill the conditions which we are supposed to do, then that will yield, not only will yield the results will come, but there will be tremendous creative joy in us that we are really, this is called job satisfaction. Job satisfaction, many people misunderstand, it is only the real fruits of work. There are two types of fruits. It is the external fruits. You know, you grow something, there will be fruits. But there are internal fruits, mental fruits. The joy that my labor has not gone in vain. See, what a wonderful thing. Most of us suffer from these problems of work because externally the fruits are there most of the time. But we don't have the internal joy. There is no joy because the work is alien to us. This is called self-alienation. It's one of the biggest problems in modern times. What is it? Self-alienation. What is self-alienation? It is not my work. I am forced to do this work. I don't consider this work as my own. That's why I do it, but I don't derive any joy out of it. This is the biggest problem, you know. You want money, wherever job is available, you get. Adjusting with the people and doing a work which is not to my liking, we have to do it. There is no other way. Now, this in a different level, this same thing applies in every field of life. Supposing, you know, two incompatible people marry. There is no joy in such type of marriage. Or a person takes a householder mental, a householder minded person becomes a monk. Then there is no joy in it. And a person who is a monk minded person marries, then also there is no joy in it. And this is very important, that most of our life goes in work. Most of we are, either we are doing the work or we are thinking about the work. And if the work is not to our liking, then it will create great misery. We may have other fruits. You may be a business person, highly successful. You may be getting a lot of money. But there will be no inner joy, creative joy. That's why the word creativity is a very special word. The moment you say here is a creative person, you think he is capable of generating a new product or an innovative product, he is discovering something or he is doing, that is not necessarily. Creativity means that whatever job we are doing, we do it with great joy. Even the simplest thing. That is why Japanese, you might have heard, there is a tea ceremony. What do they do? It's nothing special. It is not special tea at all. It is not masala, Mughalai, Indian tea. All, it is a very simple tea, just hot water, putting a little bit of tea leaves. But the way they do it, they pay full attention, the atmosphere, is a tremendous joy. There is a real incident, you know. A man went to a Zen monk, an old man. And it is Zen monks offer a lot of tea, you know, to their guests, visitors. So this Zen teacher, old man, and he was living alone. So the visitor went there and the monk offered a cup of tea. And it tasted heavenly. He said, "What brand of tea is this? I never tasted it in my life." Then the monk replied, "This is the most common type of tea with lowest cost tea leaves that only I prepared with the greatest love." What is the lesson? The lesson is that we numb our sense organs with all sorts of, you know, exotic, sensational things, and we lose touch with the most simple things in life. There is something to be learned very wonderfully well. A woman, it is a real incident, I read it in the Reader's Digest, suddenly lost her sight. For nobody knows one. One day she slipped and her head touched to the table or something. She completely lost her vision. And the doctors were puzzled. They tried so many things. Nothing happened. She remained blind. And naturally, you know, what an agony it is. A born blind person doesn't have that agony. But a person who is accustomed to see, you heard the story of Helen Keller? Even she was in childhood, at the age of 3 or so, she lost her sight, her hearing and all that. But this person was a grown-up person, suddenly she lost. And she was in real hell. And then, it is a miracle. One day she was groping alone, she fell down, and again, you know, her head touched to some hard object. And suddenly as the sight had gone, the sight had come back. And then she described what happened. Then, you know, I couldn't see, look enough. have enough of looking at the blade of grass, at the sky, at the birds, at the flowers. No, they are not anything exotic, what we see every day of our life. But she understood the deprivation of a few days of this most marvelous thing had made her realize the value of what we have. Often we lose, you know, the most simplest things are the tastiest things in the world. A sattvika person, what do you think will eat? Simplest, you know, just boiled vegetables. This Japanese had developed that art. They don't mix any masala or anything. Their theory is every vegetable, every fruit has its own unique taste. The moment you add something, you lose that capacity to enjoy it. That's why they are healthiest people in the world, longest living people in the world. Many people live 100 years, 120 years. That is one thing. But the most wonderful thing I enjoyed was, recently I had been to Japan for 10 days, wonderful holiday. I will not torment you how wonderful I enjoyed it. I doubly enjoyed it because every American should go and visit Japan. And if they visit, they will be burning with jealousy, especially the women, because you will not get one obese Japanese person, men or women. Very lean and thin, short, and then that is one. Secondly, they don't need hair coloring. Even an 80 years old woman's hair is jet black. What is the cause for this? Simple food, you know, natural food, and they enjoy their food, and in small quantities. This is a wonderful thing. Even I don't do like that, you know. Sushi, this, of course, octopus and other things are out of question. Very colorful octopus, they cut into small pieces and then arrange with a small bit of rice, and very decoratively they arrange it at one and all that. But the thing is, the quantities they take is very small quantity, they believe. And natural, most natural food. They don't boil too much. They just boil a little bit, not spiced too much. It is wonderful. The whole nation is living like that. And do you think they don't enjoy it? You may think, those are useless fellows. Once they taste McDonald's, you know, chips or chicken nuggets, then they will give up their national lifestyle forever. No. They know what Americans eat. And it's a marvelous thing. And another thing that I noticed was, they are so polite. There is a downside to it also. Many of them suffer from a lot of problems because of suppressed anger. But externally, they're very cheerful. And very, only one thing I have to tell you, whether you like it or not. That is one of the rarest countries. The moment I entered, the immigration man's face lit up, as though God has come and said, welcome to our country, enjoy your stay here. And when I come to this America, every time, glare and look into the camera, put your left index finger and right index finger in the camera, you look into the computer, all right, have a good day. So many times I came, you know, one cheerful face I have to see in the immigration. Of course, when I come outside the immigration place, everybody is cheerful. I hope so. So, the point I am making is, there is a great lot of joy in the simplest of things that we can do. Simplicity of living, this is a word used very often misunderstood. Simplicity doesn't apply to the external things only. Simplicity is more applies to our state of mind. When the mind is cluttered with all sorts of ideas. That is why, what is Sharanagati? Sharanagati is the simplest type of mental attitude, which is the most important thing in life, and it is not to be cluttered with hundreds of other things. It is an attitude of mind. Spiritual life is an attitude of mind, which I will deal tomorrow in more details. Okay. So, anukulasya sankalpaha. I take a strong vow, sankalpa. It is a wonderful word. Sankalpa means this is my only goal in life for the time being. When we do puja, no, Hindu puja, we have to do sankalpa. Why I am doing this worship? Devotees of Sri Ramakrishna, what they do, you know? Jnana bhakti vairagya utpadanaya, for the sake of knowledge, devotion, faith, sincerity, for the welfare of all the devotees, Sri Ramakrishna puja aham karishye, I worship Sri Ramakrishna. The sankalpa has to be given. By the grace of the Lord, let us all develop. Here is a sankalpa. I take a firm vow. I will do only whatever I know will please the Lord. And how do I know? I will come to that point shortly. So the next is pratikulasya varjanam. Whatever displeases the Lord, I will avoid like poison. This is the vow again. So sankalpa, you have to add sankalpa. How do we know what the Divine Lord wants? After all, does He come and tell us? There are two simple guidelines for this. One, here are the scriptures. The scriptures are telling us, do this and do not this. Take for example, 10 commandments. What are these 10 commandments? Do not do this. And the other, some commandments say, do this. You know, I have written 5 articles on the 5 teachings of Sri Ramakrishna. I titled them as 5 commandments of Sri Ramakrishna. I think you will get them on our website if you want to go into details. So somebody wrote to me, your articles are very nice, we enjoyed it, but I don't like the title. Commandment sounds like you are ordering me to do it. If I want to do it, I will do it as a free person. Who are you to command? You know, how much we are unthinking. We are living a life of commandment. We are obeying everybody's commandment, you know. It's cloudy. The cloud is commanding, be morose. Suffer from depression immediately. The sun comes out and says, be cheerful, commandment. And immediately we are cheerful. You are driving the motor car. The red light comes, stop. The green light comes, go. And you go to your officer, says, you see, please come at 8 o'clock. What does he mean? You better come at 8 o'clock. You know, commandment. You go to a doctor. He says, please take this medicine. What is he telling? You better take this medicine. Otherwise, we'll bind you hand and foot and inject you. You know, it's all, we are all, every minute of our life, we have to obey these things. You have to pay insurance. And they say, you know, to make it soft, you can pay by, please pay by installments. Do we pay less by paying by installments? But it gives a psychological illusion. We are paying very less. You know, commandments, that is what is our life consisting of. But here is the divine commandment. Do this and don't do that. So this is one way of understanding what the Divine Lord wants us to do. Especially the law of karma. Because it's the law of cause and effect. We do not understand fully. Sometimes a baby suffers. You don't understand what this baby had done to, you know, deserve this kind of suffering. Sometimes a person leads good life, but all the time the person is undergoing suffering. Do you mean to say this good life and suffering, are they correlated? Or is my this what I do now is going to yield good fruits at some point? It's a mystery. That's why we have to rely upon, have faith and rely upon scriptures. The second guideline is even simpler. I do not need to look into even a scripture or to any other person. If somebody hurts me, don't I feel bad? If somebody tells me a lie, don't I feel cheated? If somebody cheats me, here is a wonderful psychological truth. A lie is effective only it dons the garb of truth. Is it not? Suppose somebody tells you a lie, and if you know it is a lie, will you believe in it? It should be, it should, the person should make it appear as though that is the truth. You see, a lie will be ineffective if it is known as a lie. So it has to appear in the form of a truth. What a wonderful thing it is. If somebody is selfish, don't we feel the pain? If somebody is loving, don't we feel very happy? If somebody has helped us, don't we feel happy? This is the simplest guideline. Once a Jewish rabbi, a very famous rabbi, was asked by a non-Jewish person, I am interested in learning Judaism, can you teach me? And the rabbi said, how much time do you have? The man said, I don't have much time. And he said, you know, Judaism is very complex. Even after spending whole lifetime, you understand only a little bit of it. But it doesn't matter. If you have very short time, I will tell you the whole essence of Judaism. It is this. Don't do unto others what you don't want others to do to you. The rest is commentary. What a beautiful way of putting is, this is what exactly Bhagavad Gita is telling us. That a person who progresses in spiritual life, progressively identifies himself with the whole universe. The whole universe becomes, as it were, his own self. He becomes, as it were, the self of all beings. Means the distinctions are obliterated. That is the sure sign of spiritual progress. Spiritual progress always moves in two dimensions. Rather, I should put it in three dimensions. That I look upon myself as divine, and as I start coming closer to God, my own divinity becomes more clear. At the same time, the divinity of the world also becomes more clear. At the same time, the divinity of God also becomes more clear. So you may say, is not God divine even before we start? It is an intellectual idea. Your idea of God is your intellectual concept. It is not a precept. It is a concept, your thought, your imagination, your fantasy. You know, there was a school and there was a drawing class. And the drawing master gave an assignment that you draw something and show it to me. So he was going round after some time. He saw one girl trying to draw something. So he asked, honey, what are you drawing? A small girl. She said, I am drawing God. And so the teacher asked, do you know what God looks like? The girl said, no, but when I finish, I will know what God looks like. She's absolutely right. Because what we think about God, that is what is God according to us. That's why Swami Vivekananda made a very significant statement, God grows as man grows. Because man grows means as his understanding becomes deeper, his concept about God also, it expands, it grows, it becomes, deepens. So, how do we know what God wants us to do? These two guidelines are there. The teachings of the scriptures and our own experience. So, every creature is like us. Nobody wants to get hurt. Everybody wants to be loved. Is it not? This is the essence of morality. Okay. Anukulasya sankalpa pratikulasya varjana. When a person tries to do it, tremendous conviction comes into his mind that there is nobody in this world who can save me. Only one being can save me. Who is that? God. That's why he says, rakshishyati iti vishvasaha. He will save me. A strong faith will come. He will alone save me. To illustrate this point, our scriptures give, Puranas, mythological books give several illustrations. One of the illustrations is Draupadi. You know, Draupadi was being disrobed in Mahabharata, and then she calls Krishna. But what she's saying, she is trying to hold on to the dress and calling, Krishna, please come and save me. And he didn't come. Then you see, she understood. What am I trying to do? I am trying to protect myself. And at the same time, telling that God, you come and save me. God will not come. Self, as long as you help yourself, God will not come. You know, there is, God helps those who help themselves. And Swami Vivekananda is, I say, God helps those who do not help themselves, in a higher sense. You know, we can misunderstand scriptural statements in so many ways. You know, there was an old woman. One day she was in a hot place, she was walking in a street, and she fainted. Immediately people gathered around her, and some started fanning her, some started sprinkling water, nothing was helping. One young man was passing by, she said, you know, it is just this exhaustion, bring a little bit whiskey and pour a little bit into her mouth. Nobody was paying attention to that man. Suddenly this old woman got and shouted, you rogues, shut your mouths, listen to what this man is saying. And fainted back. That will not do. Rakshishyasi iti vishwasa. The illustration is, Draupadi understood that only God can save. If he is saving me, why do I need to hold on? In any case, it is not going to help. She just let her hands go and say, Krishna, please come and help me. Instantaneously, this, you know, you have seen the scene. The idea is whether there was so much of sari or not, that's not the point. The point is, she was saved. Another illustration is Gajendra Moksha. An elephant went to sport in a lake, and a big crocodile had. These are highly significant symbolic stories. It is not stories, there is a moral behind it. These are like parables. So the crocodile caught hold, and the Gajendra, very strong elephant, fought as long as he could. And then he was being gradually dragged into the deeper waters, and he realized, excepting God, nobody can save me. And as soon as he realized, he let go the fight and prayed, O Lord, please come and save me. The moment he let go and depended upon God with complete faith, immediately a Lord came with his, you know, chakra, discus. He destroyed the crocodile and saved. This is a story to illustrate that we have to depend upon God totally. Partial dependence will not do. 50-50. Don't depend upon God 50-50. 50 on yourself and 50 on God. Do you know the story of 50-50? You know, Second World War in England, not America. Meat was very rare. Rabbit meat was very rare because they were eating up all the provisions, you see. So one restaurant advertised, rabbit meat served here. So a man went, ordered a dish of rabbit meat. He started eating but wasn't finding anything remotely resembling rabbit meat. So he called the manager and said, "Do you really serve rabbit meat here?" He said, "Sir, look, rabbits are very rare. And so we just mix it with something else." "So what did you mix here?" And he said, "We mixed with a little bit of horse flesh." "So in what proportion?" He said, 50-50. "What do you mean by 50-50? One rabbit, one horse." "So you rely upon God 50-50. What is the proportion?" "That will not do. Rakshishyasi iti vishwasa," complete faith. And Sri Ramakrishna had illustrated this through his life, demonstrated it through his life. Rakshishyasi iti vishwasa goptritva varnam is a very wonderful way of expressing the Sharanagati Tattva. Philosophy of self-surrender. Goptritva varna. I know that God will save me, but I will have to choose and say, "Oh Lord, I know you are going to save me. I will choose you." It is very important. We all know, we all say we believe in God, and we have intellectual understanding that God will save, but we do not choose Him. We do not choose Him. We believe in everything else, including President Bush, excepting in God. So, goptritva varanam, that is the fourth condition to be fulfilled. Then having chosen, what is the meaning of choosing here? You see, God is a concept. The concept is always clothed in different expressions. If I am a Hindu, either Rama or Krishna or the Divine Mother is the God for me. If you are a Christian, either Jesus Christ or the Father in heaven, He is the God for you. If you are a Muslim, then you know Allah, Prophet Muhammad, Allah is the God for you. Or if you are a Buddhist, Buddha is the God for you. This is the concept. This concept has to be clothed. Choose. This is where Ishta Devata Siddhanta will come. Otherwise, it becomes a vague, you know, notion floating in the sky. It doesn't help. You have to specially choose and say, "Oh Lord, I love Krishna. Okay, Krishna, please be my protector." So, this is called Goptritva Varanam. Like a bride, you know, choosing the in the olden days, of course, in nowadays also, you know, is a garland. She will be going around with a big garland. And whichever person she chooses, she will throw the garland upon that person, indicating, "I have chosen." So the devotee has to choose God. Of course, God has already chosen. The devotee has to choose God. It is a very wonderful incident. A bit funny, but real, very wonderful. You know, Sri Ramakrishna married Holy Mother. When he was in a peculiar state, people thought he was mad. So his mother brought him to Kamarpukur and she decided the only cure for madness is marriage. Not knowing that real madness only starts. So anyway, everybody thinks, we have a saying in Telugu, you know, pichi kaakapothe pichi lekapothe pendli kaadu, pendli kaakapothe pichi kudaradu ani. A man went mad because he was not getting married. Now it is a vicious circle. Unless he gets married, his madness will not be cured. And unless his madness is cured, he can't be married. So, Sri Ram, they were searching for a bride. And everywhere they tried, But nobody, everybody, there are many people who refused Sri Ramakrishna, because he was well known. These things spreads like even faster than email, faster than spam, that Sri Ramakrishna had gone mad. So these girls also were not willing to marry him. Who wants to marry a madman? But there is a sequence to that, which I will tell you later on. Then Sri Ramakrishna told them, don't go here and there. My bride is reserved there in Jayarambati, and you go. And actually it happened. It was a very young girl, only 4 or 5 years old. And they had no option. So they had to, get married. But there is also something which you may not know. You see, Sri Ramakrishna had to pay heavily. 300 rupees he had to pay to get Holy Mother. Yeah. So if it makes you any happier, then that is the good information for you. But before that, an incident happened. Once there was a celebration in somebody's house, and Sri Ramakrishna was also there, and Holy Mother as a young girl was there. Maybe she was hardly 2 and a half or 2, 3, something like that. You know, village women, they make fun at the cost of these children. Some village woman has said, my darling, whom are you going to marry? Immediately this small girl lifted both hands and pointed, this man. She had already chosen. He is telling, you say, somebody is reserved. She is telling that I have chosen to marry him. Goptritva varanam. Choose, I choose Lord to be my refuge. I choose. It's a wonderful word. And after that, atmanikshepa. From that, the moment you say, Lord, I take refuge in him. I have chosen you. And I leave all my cares upon your shoulders. This is called Atma Nikshepaha or Bhara Nikshepaha, my Bhara. All my cares, all my life, I offer it to you. And what should a man do after that? This is the fifth one. What should he do? Karpanye. With the greatest humility, O Lord, what wonderful is your grace. I am able to lead this life all because of your grace. So you bring good, bad, like a baby. Completely depends upon the mother. The baby is happy because the mother is there to look after it. And Sri Ramakrishna used to give several illustrations to make this point clear. One illustration he used to give is, like a dry leaf. Sometimes the wind blows it this side, sometimes that side. Wherever the leaf blows, it is all the wind that is doing it. Be like a dry leaf in the wind. But even more telling is the illustration. There are two attitudes. Self-dependency, God-dependency. Is what is called Markata Nyaya Marjara Nyaya. Markata means young one of a monkey. What does it do? It clings to the mother. So there is a danger. If the mother is in danger, it can simply throw away the baby and then it can escape. It happens. Don't be like that. But Marjara Nyaya, like a kitten. What does kitten do? It simply knows mew. It simply says mew. Wherever its mother is, it will come running and it will hold. Have you ever seen films? How a tigress or a lioness, small cub, it just takes this jaw which can crush even the biggest buffalo's head, it just snaps. It is so delicately it holds. It is a joy to see that. That even a hair will not be displaced by this, I've seen one scene like that. Mother wanted to take the baby somewhere else and it put it up. It was not enough because the chubby baby, all that it was doing is drinking the milk and then growing fat like an American baby. So the mother took back its head and then it was doing like this. To its maximum extent, it then so that the baby will not be hurt. And the baby also, you must know, if you have ever seen, what does the baby do? Complete relaxation. That is why you say it is like a foot rug or like a kitten. You know, have you ever seen how a kitten lies down? If you want to relax, relax like a kitten. Complete relaxation, you know, like a, you know, this it was hanging like this. Yeah. So that complete reliance, it knows my mother is taking me to a safe place. It is not worried. See the difference, how it can hold the, say, prey animal, or how it will hold its own baby. It is the same creature. So karpanye, and Sri Ramakrishna used to give, be like a kitten. Or he used to give another illustration. A man had two children, and the eldest one, it is capable of holding father's hand, and it can sleep. But the elder one, younger one, is incapable of walking or holding. So what does the father do? Father holds the baby in his hands. And there is no danger of the baby slipping, falling and getting hurt. Two, attitudes. The jnani's attitude is, I will do sadhana. The devotee's attitude is, that my mother will protect me, God will protect me. This is what exactly Ramanuja was illustrating. Karpanye anukulasya sankalpaha pratikulasya vajjanam rakshishyasiti vishvasaha goptruptavarnam atmanikshepaha karpanye iti shadvidha sharanagatihi. These are the 6 conditions to be fulfilled if we really mean that we have to surrender ourselves to God. I will just briefly mention how wonderfully Sri Ramakrishna had fulfilled these conditions. You know, when he undertook sadhana, if you have read the life of Sri Ramakrishna, then the first thing that he did was he completely surrendered himself to Mother and said, Mother, I am a fool. I don't know what the scriptures tell me. I have nobody to guide me. I only have you to look after me, to guide me. Please do with whatever you want me to do. Make me speak whatever you want me to speak. Make me do whatever you want to make me do, and reveal to me yourself. And then you know what happened? After that, is cutting capers, what superhuman austerities he had undergone, because the mother was telling him, do this, don't do this. How was she telling? In the form of intuitive understanding. Now you take this one in one hand coin, another hand a lump of clay, taka, mati, mati, taka, clay and money have the same, exactly the same value. Or so many other weird practice. He went to the lavatory, cleaner's lavatory, and with his own hands he cleaned the place. Weeping he prayed, O mother, let me never feel I am in any way superior to these people. After all, everything is everybody is mother's child only. And what are all the other things he did, we have no record, because who was there? Was somebody having a camera like this, taking, you know, what sadhana he was doing? We have no idea how many wonderful things he did. He did superhuman tapasya for more than 12 years. And the result was that he had realized God in various ways, according to the Hindu directions, Christianity, Islam, and Tantra, and devotional path, path of knowledge, every way that is possible, he became an expert. He followed, in brief, the 4 yogas, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga, and Jnana Yoga. Even Hatha Yoga he followed. Hatha Yoga. He said, I intensely practiced Hatha Yoga. The result was, I will not go into the details, but blood came out one day. It was a saver, life saver in a way of speaking. That incident is separate. So, even though he surrendered himself to mother, he didn't simply keep quiet. He did what he was told intuitively, you have to do this. And after several years, he said, mother had revealed to me in all her beautiful myriad expressions. And then the mother decided that the formal teaching was necessary. Then the teachers came, Bhairavi Brahmani came, then Totapuri came, then Govinda came, all these people came. Long after that, once Sri Ramakrishna said, before all the teachers came, mother had shown me everything what these teachers have showed me. Then where was the necessity for the teachers to come? It's for two reasons. One reason was, he wanted to know that is it according to the scriptures, and also it is an ideal. Otherwise any fool say Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, what teacher he had, and he simply say practice whatever came into his mind. Whatever comes into my mind, I will also do it. And the result will be, ultimately we burden the lunatic asylums in the part of the world. You know, how much purity is necessary to depend upon ourselves. Every fool thinks, you know, Allah has ordered me to destroy this. So many people go on hearing voice of God. I get across these incidents, so many incidents, and they are so good, sometimes I weep. You see, their life is being destroyed. They are highly educated and they are beautiful young men and women, but they suffer from these delusions that God has ordered me. Everybody knows they are mad and they won't listen to anybody. They come to me for, Swami, am I hearing God? What do you expect me to do? Say that you better go to a psychiatrist. They will lose faith in me also. I am in a very difficult position, you know. I have to guide him slowly. No, it is all right, but this is how you have to behave. But unfortunately, they won't listen. They only listen to the first part. I am all right. What I am hearing is from God. That part only they want to hear. The rest, how he or she should behave. It's a pity, you know, the whole human life is wasted because they sincerely are obsessed with the idea, they are hearing God, they know what is right, and they are highly spiritual. I had wonderful experiences. I think every Swami will have this kind of experience. And did I tell you? When I was in Bangalore, one person used to read a lot of mythological stories. He came, his name was Narendra, unfortunately. Came to me, I asked, what is your name? Narendra. So after that he started coming. And I asked, how are you, Narendra? Oh, I am all right, Swami. So next day he came, how are you, Narendra? I am all right, Swami. Third day he came, without my asking, I am all right, Swami. Then he said, I am Narayana and I am searching for my Lakshmi. You know, this kind of statement, because he heard these mythological stories, somehow he was convinced that his Lakshmi was waiting, pining away for him. What can you do about it? So this kind of cases are, plenty of cases are there, not only in India, here also. Once they showed on the TV, this what is called charismatic movements, and in London, you know, thousands, nearly 20,000 to 30,000 people gathered there, and the preacher was telling, by God's grace, God, I feel God, all your fillings of your teeth are turning into gold. One reporter went, and he went, the persons were, you know, they shake, they dance here and all those things. So the reporter went, and he says, right, interviewing one person, do you believe that the fillings in your teeth have become gold? said, "What madcap, I am seeing it." The reporter said, "Open your mouth, let me see." It was the same dirty old feeling which was smelling. But the man was completely convinced that it turned into gold. Can you think I am telling a story? This was there on the BBC. This madness is there everywhere. Rationality flies through the window when we are so weak. Anyway, the point is, karp panya means, it has many meanings. One of the meanings is, O Lord, whatever I am able to do is because of the strength you have given me. I could not even surrender if you had not given me the strength to surrender myself to you. So these are the conditions to be fulfilled if somebody wants to follow the path of self-surrender, simply uttering, muttering, proclaiming every now and then, "I have taken refuge in the Lord," is not going to help. I will stop this talk with this beautiful incident. The devotees of Sri Ramakrishna must be aware of it. There was a character called Girish Chandra Ghosh, and he came to Sri Ramakrishna. It's a wonderful story. Many people advised him, "If you are looking for spirituality, go to Sri Ramakrishna." He was a drunkard. "So, I know, I will not go to these fellows. The first thing they advise me is give up drinking." Somebody said, "Why don't you see Sri Ramakrishna?" And he came and he asked, "Do you want me to give up drinking?" And Sri Ramakrishna said, who told you that you should give up? Drink more." "This is the type of guru I want. This is the guru I have been searching my whole life." Sri Ramakrishna was a great psychologist, you know. He said, "Drink to your heart's content. But this you do, before drinking, offer it to the Divine Mother and drink as prasad." And you know, by the grace of Sri Ramakrishna, the man thought, you know, he didn't ask me to stop. All that I need to do is to offer it to the Mother. But Girish Chandra Ghosh, one thing, there are two things about him which you must keep in mind if you want to understand his character. He was absolutely truthful man. Second, that he had, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, he had 125% faith in God. Shraddha, what we call Shraddha. Never forget this. He was a very truthful man. He was not afraid of anybody. So he slowly transformed himself, but still, you know, he was worried. "I have done so many sins, and then I have drunk so much wine. I have done so many vile things which society considered as impure, immoral." And then he was regretting. You know, that is, many of our, we go on regretting it. Sharanagati means we shouldn't regret. "Yes, I have done. I accept it. But I have surrendered myself. The Lord will do whatever is necessary to purify me. I am not to worry." So, a time came when Girish Chandra Ghosh felt terrible pangs for God realization. But he was also racked with this guilty conscience. Sri Ramakrishna understood the time has come, right time. So he said, "Girish, don't worry. Take God's name morning and evening." He said, "Sir, let alone taking morning, when I am drunk, I will not even know which is morning and which is evening." The Ramakrishna said, "You take God's name once a day, just once a day." And Girish Chandra Ghosh thought and said, "I cannot promise, because sometimes days pass without my being aware." Then he said, "At least before meals." He said, "I have taken many times meals without being aware that I am taking meals. I can't do that." Then Sri Ramakrishna said, "Give me your power of attorney." And Girish Chandra Ghosh said, "What a wonderful thing. I don't need to do anything. Sri Ramakrishna will do everything." He said, "Done. Deal is done." And he really gave it. And Sri Ramakrishna had really accepted it. But the point is, until Sri Ramakrishna said, "Give me your power of attorney," he could not say, "I am surrendering myself." it was Sri Ramakrishna's grace which enabled him to say, yes, I will give my power, I place myself under your control. That is the point. Unless God gives us that power, we cannot surrender. But he will definitely do that if we are sincere. Then he started thinking, oh, how wonderful it is. Then he later on made a statement. But before that, an incident. One day, out of old habit, Girish Chandra Ghosh said, I will do this in the presence of Sri Ramakrishna. And immediately Sri Ramakrishna, you know, he was very alert. Immediately caught hold of him, Girish, is it right to say I will do it? You should say, if God wills, I will do it. Because he was reminding, you have surrendered yourself. Who are you to say that I will do it? There is no I there. Immediately, intelligent, you know, Girish Chandra Ghosh understood, yes, my mistake. I will never issue such a statement again. So he became completely transformed later on. But sometimes he used to say, you know, Sri Ramakrishna told me to take God's name only once in a day. What a fool I was not to say that, yes, I will do that. Now, I have every breath, I have to remind myself that it is you, it is you, it is you. There is an end. You know, once in a day you take God's name, forget him. But here, I cannot afford to forget him at any time. And a time came, he had a son, and the son died. He felt like weeping. He said, who am I? God has given, God has taken away. Who am I to weep? You know, there is so much involved in this Sharanagati. But he succeeded in it. And ultimately, he became one of the greatest saints. Nobody could see this transformation. Sri Ramakrishna predicted. People will be amazed at the transformation they will see in Girish, because nobody believed this drunkard, this lecherous, this immoral man is going to become one of the greatest saints and his life will be transformed. Just one statement of Girish Chandra Ghosh I will tell and finish my talk. And Girish Chandra Ghosh, you know, he knew he was saved. So he used to regret sometimes. That, you know, had I only known that Ramakrishna is going to save me, I could have drunk a lot more wine. So, this is what the Lord is telling, that ultimately all sadhanas lead to this understanding that without surrendering oneself to the Lord, it is not possible to do any sadhana. It is God who gives the desire for spiritual life. It is God who gives the opportunity. It is God who slowly guides us in the form of a guru from lower step to a higher step. And ultimately, it is God who reveals himself to the sadhaka out of his own grace. So this is the philosophy of Sharanagati, self-surrender. What is self-surrender? The self completely becomes one with the self, that is called self-surrender. Then there is no I, there is no thou, all that remains is avang manasa gocharam, beyond mind and speech. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. So there will be